The sun was below the horizon, casting the afternoon shadow over the kitchen, where the roasted turkey aroma met freshly baked pie. I stirred a pot of gravy, standing and feeling my heart beat from anticipation. For me, Thanksgiving has always been a time for family, but it felt different this year. Unsaid tension hung in the air, and I could tell by the way my parents looked at each other, smiling tightly. My parents were bustling about, oblivious to the storm brewing inside me. They were excited about their new life, their retirement plans, and how they would finally be free of me. I could feel it. Their excitement was a knife twisting my gut.
Joel, would you set the table?
My mother called from the dining room. I nodded, forcing a smile on my lips as I set the ladle down. My hands trembled slightly. I was on edge, and I didn't know why. Perhaps it was the weight of their impending announcement, the one that they had hinted at but never fully revealed. As I arranged the silverware, I overheard snippets of their conversation. We can't keep supporting him. My father's voice was low but firm. He needs to learn to stand on his own. My heart sank. I knew what they meant. They were finally cutting me off financially. The thought sent a chill down my spine. Dinner commenced with laughter and clinking glasses, but I felt detached from the warmth that enveloped the room. My parents chattered about retirement plans and dreams of travel, while I forced myself to join in, laughing when appropriate, nodding along. Inside, a storm brewed. As we moved to dessert, my mother's expression shifted.
Joel,
she began, hesitantly.
There's something we need to discuss.
My pulse quickened. This was it, the moment that would shatter everything. Not now, Lisa. My father interjected sharply. Let's enjoy this time together. But I could see it in their eyes, the fear of what lay ahead. I excused myself under the pretense of needing fresh air and stepped outside into the cool night. The stars twinkled above like distant eyes, watching my every move. My mind raced as I paced back and forth on the porch, thoughts spiraling into dark corners. When I returned inside, the atmosphere had shifted dramatically. My parents were no longer smiling. Instead, they wore expressions of concern mixed with something else. Disappointment? Fear? It gnawed at me.
Joel.
My mother started again, her voice trembling slightly.
We've decided.
But before she could finish, something snapped inside of me. The years of feeling inadequate and dependent surged forward like a tidal wave. Enough! I shouted, startling them both. You think you can just abandon me after everything? Their faces paled as realization dawned on them. Their son was no longer just angry. He was dangerous. After dinner, while they cleaned up, I slipped away to my room. The shadows danced on the walls as I pulled out my notebook, the book of premeditation. Each page detailed my plan. Get knives, sledgehammers, bleach, everything necessary to erase them from existence. As I returned to the kitchen, adrenaline coursed through my veins. My heart pounded like a war drum as I approached my father from behind. He was distracted, humming softly to himself as he washed dishes. Dad? I said softly. He turned, surprise flickering across his face just before it vanished into confusion. What's wrong? In one swift motion, I grabbed the knife from the counter and plunged it into his back. The world went silent. Time froze as he gasped in disbelief.
What are you doing?
He croaked, shock flooding his eyes. I pulled out the knife and struck again. 42 times in total, each thrust fueled by years of resentment, boiling over into pure rage. My mother entered just as I finished. Her scream pierced through the air like shattering glass.
Joel, no!
But it only fueled my frenzy. The world around me faded. All that mattered was silencing them forever. She fought back fiercely. Her love for him made her desperate to save her husband and herself. I was beyond control as chaos broke loose in the once happy home. The bodies collapsed to the floor like rag dolls, with no life left in them. At this point, it dawned on me that I had done like a wave of ice-cold water. I dragged their bodies into the bathroom where I had prepared everything. Plastic bins filled with corrosive chemicals awaited their remains, like hungry beasts ready to devour their prey. As I dismembered them piece by piece, a sense of relief washed over me. This was liberation. I left their remains dissolving in acid and retreated to my room, hoping to escape the horror of what I'd done. The house felt different now. It was mine alone. I glanced out the window at the world waking up outside. A smile crept across my face as I realized that no one would ever know what happened here. Not today or ever. Days passed before anyone noticed they were missing. Days filled with paranoia and guilt, gnawing at my insides like rats in a cage. When police finally arrived for a welfare check after my mother's co-workers reported her absence, panic surged through me. They found everything. The boiling pot on the stove still simmering with remnants of what used to be her head. Body parts dissolving in acid. Notes detailing every step of my plan, scattered across the floor like confetti at a twisted celebration. As they uncovered each horrifying detail, all I could think was how close I'd come to freedom, and how quickly it had unraveled into chaos. Thanksgiving will never be just another holiday for me again. It is now forever etched in blood, a reminder of what happens when love turns into horror. The story was inspired by a horrific incident that happened on November 26, 2016. Joel Jr., then 28 years old, was living off his parents' financial support when they decided to stop funding his lifestyle as they prepared for retirement. The couple had recently sold their home and were planning to move into a more budget-friendly residence. This decision prompted a violent reaction from their son, who felt entitled to their support and had a significant motive, a $500,000 life insurance policy that would pay out if both parents were dead. The murders occurred in their home in Tennessee, where Joel Jr. meticulously planned the horrific acts that followed. With dawn breaking and police arrived, he was later convicted and was sentenced to life imprisonment. He was beautiful, handsome, breathtaking. Bill was the embodiment of everything I had always dreamed of, something far away from the place that had caused me so much pain. A tall man, blonde, with eyes as blue as the sky. I was completely captivated by his charisma and his promises of a bright future. He was a flirtatious, kind man, and he was fascinated that I came from a place as far away as Egypt. He helped me a lot in my career. I managed to grow and become known as the Great Omaima, the Pharaoh, with my exotic outfits and traditional style. It was Bill's idea. He said it would attract more attention. After every celebration, we always went out for burgers together. One of the things I loved about this country was how wild and free it was. Colorful parties, flamboyant people. I loved it all. I was living the American dream. Although Bill always told me he'd like to move to a simpler, more culturally rich place, I always joked with him, saying that was fine, but I'd only eat once a day. When we got married, everything was incredible. I was a famous woman, known as the Great Pharaoh, and I was a respected woman. I hated that title. I just wanted to serve my beloved, the one who had brought me here. One day, tired of being called that, I wanted something new. I contacted a great designer who made me a beautiful, innovative outfit made of fine fabrics and the latest fashions. I loved it, and I showed it to Bill. But do you know what he did? He started by laughing. But when he saw I was serious, he got angry and started shouting at me. I had never seen him like that before. He hated that I was wearing that outfit. He thought it was vulgar. When I insisted that it was revolutionary, he started hitting me, tore the outfit off me, and told me, naked, that this was the natural state I should be in, like a pharaoh, untouched by the world. I realized that Bill was obsessed with Egyptian culture. In time, I came to understand that what he wanted wasn't a wife, but a relic. Now, he forced me to wear traditional Egyptian clothes, yelled at me if he saw me in anything American, even at home, and scolded me for any attempt to assimilate into my new home. He didn't even know the real culture, only what had been shown to him thousands of years ago. He wanted me to be more Egyptian than ever, and any deviation was met with shouting, or worse. I wanted a distraction. We were always invited to parties, but he refused to go. But with Thanksgiving coming up, I wanted to have a party and invite my friends and Bill's colleagues. I didn't think he'd mind. I started organizing everything in secret. I knew he would be upset when he found out, but I preferred it to be in front of his friends so he could drink with them and be distracted. I didn't care if he beat me afterwards. I was determined to take control of my life. I bought everything to make several special and traditional dishes. The turkey, salads, side dishes, everything. I wanted it to be perfect, but I was too obvious. When he arrived, he could see the dishes laid out, the big table, and the smell in the kitchen. His face showed a deep connection to his childhood, a familiar smell and a date he clearly recognized. Do you know why the smell took him back to his childhood? Well, those wide open eyes, his sunken eye sockets, and his receding hairline were more noticeable than ever, with pronounced bald spots and those wrinkles. I'd never seen him like this before. He asked me what I was doing, and full of fear, I tried to tell him that it was just a small event. But he exploded. He came over and hit my head hard against the kitchen counter. I saw the blood gushing out. He had never gone that far before. He hit me several times. He kicked me in the stomach, and when I fell to the floor, he continued to punch me in the face and stomach. Then he whipped me with his belt while I screamed for him to stop, begging him not to hurt me. Finally, he grabbed me by the collar of my shirt and said something I will never forget. "You'll never be an American. You'll always be a foreigner." Anger and fear clouded my mind. I grabbed the nearest knife, and before I knew it, I was stabbing him in the chest. Once, twice, until his body stopped moving. It was an instinctive act. When I realized the floor was covered in blood and I was on my knees. A little later, I put on makeup and slipped into a dress I had bought for the occasion. A comfortable, long, simple dress. I felt so good, so free. The guests arrived one by one, and everyone was so impressed. They had never seen me like this before, and they all complimented me on being so brave and trying different things. I felt amazing as I served everyone and brought out the silver trays, closed to keep the food warm. Everything was perfect, the side dishes, the cutlery. I paid attention to the smallest details, and finally, the main course. Everyone served themselves and enjoyed what I had prepared. I had never tried cooking American food before, but they all praised me. The salad, the mashed potatoes, the fine wine, the turkey, and the meat, everything was delicious. While everyone was enjoying themselves, I decided to say a few words.
"I know this is usually done before, but I didn't know it was my first time,"
I said. Everyone laughed.
"Bill hated this party. Hated what it stood for."
Everyone laughed because they knew it was true. He hated everything about it. Then I revealed what was hidden under the sealed centerpiece tray.
"Oh, my dear Bill. Now you're truly one with the traditions,"
I said as I unveiled his head hanging in the center of the table, the guests having already consumed part of him.
"Now Bill is inside all of you. And I think this way, you'll finally understand the importance of traditions."
Everyone began to scream in terror, terrified and running as fast as they could. It was a scene of panic, but I didn't care because I felt euphoric, so happy and so free. This story is based on the true case. In 1991, Omaima Nelson, a 23-year-old Egyptian model, brutally murdered her 56-year-old husband, Bill Nelson, at their home in Costa Mesa, California, on Thanksgiving Day. Omaima stabbed him repeatedly and then beat him to death with a clothes iron. After his death, she dismembered his body, cooked parts of it, and allegedly ate his ribs with barbecue sauce. Omaima claims she killed him in self-defense, alleging years of physical and sexual abuse by Bill, who she said raped her on the morning of the murder. But prosecutors argued that Omaima was a con artist who used sex to manipulate and steal from men. After a disturbing trial that included testimony about cannibalism, she was convicted of second-degree murder in 1993 and sentenced to 27 years in prison. Although Omaima denied eating her husband, her actions in the trial captured public attention, with comparisons drawn to popular cultural figures such as Hannibal Lecter. It was the day before Thanksgiving. I should have been excited, preparing for the holiday, but something wasn't right. Gilberto, my husband, had been acting strange lately. He'd been spending hours locked away in his study, always on his laptop. It could be just work stress. He was a cop, after all. But deep down, I knew. I knew something was wrong, and the man I'd been in love with was a monster in disguise. That day, while vacuuming, I noticed his laptop sitting on the dining table. The screen was lit up, and Gilberto was nowhere in sight. I shouldn't have looked, but something pulled me to it. I glanced at the screen as my heart pounded harder with each passing second. Could my husband be seeing someone? With hitched breath, I went through his conversation. Surely there were chats, but it wasn't anything I expected. Gilberto wasn't cheating on me. I wish he was. I read one, then another. The words, they didn't make sense at first. Roast her slowly, cook her alive. And then I saw the names. Women we knew. I felt sick. I wanted to look away, but I couldn't. The things he was describing, what he'd do to them. He was planning to kidnap these women. He talked about eating them, like they were some kind of Thanksgiving dinner. My whole body went cold. This was my husband, the man I married, the man who kissed our daughter goodnight every evening. My heart was racing, and I felt dizzy like I was about to pass out. What had I just found? That's when I heard his footsteps upstairs. My blood froze. He was coming down. I slammed the laptop shut and shoved it into the hall closet just before Gilberto arrived. He smiled at me, full of affection, like nothing was wrong. But his eyes, they were different, darker, colder. "Everything okay, love?" He asked so casually, I was momentarily certain I was hallucinating. But I knew. I'd seen it all. I forced a smile.
"Yeah, just cleaning."
My voice shook. He stared at me for a beat too long, like he was waiting for something. And then he turned and walked into the kitchen. I wanted to scream, to run, but I couldn't. I was trapped in my own home with a man I didn't recognize anymore. My husband was planning to kill and eat people who were his friends. That night, I barely slept. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw those chats. Months planned he had laid out in detail. The next morning, Thanksgiving Day, Gilberto was his usual self, smiling, laughing, playing with our daughter. But I couldn't look at him without feeling my stomach turn. He was a monster, hiding behind a cop's uniform, pretending to be a loving father. I watched him closely all day. His every move felt calculated and deliberate, like he was wearing a mask. But when our friends arrived for dinner, a hunger simmered in his eyes. Was I blind to never notice it before? I wanted to scream, warn our friends. I couldn't shake the feeling that they were in danger, sitting just feet away from the man who had fantasized about eating them. As the evening went on, I couldn't take it anymore. The tension inside me was unbearable. I excused myself and went upstairs, locking myself in the bathroom. My hands shook as I picked up the phone, and I called the police. What do you even say in a situation like this? How do you tell them that your husband is a cop plotting to kidnap and eat people? But I had to do it. For my daughter, for myself, for all the women who might end up on his twisted menu. When they came for him, it was like a nightmare coming alive. Sirens blared, lights flashed, and Gilberto was hauled out of our home in handcuffs. He looked at me with such venom, like I was the one who betrayed him. But I wasn't the one with those sick, twisted thoughts. He was. I will never forgive you. Never. I will never forgive you. I thought I would feel relief, but all I felt was a deep, sinking dread. The man I had married, the father of my child, was capable of things I couldn't even begin to understand. He was charged with conspiracy to kidnap, with plans to kill and eat women. They called him the cannibal cop. I saved those women. Hell, I saved myself. But at what cost? My life, my family, everything was shattered. And Thanksgiving? It'll never be the same again. This story is based on the true case of Gilberto Valet, the cannibal cop, who was arrested in 2012 for plotting to kidnap and eat women. His wife discovered his disturbing online plans and turned him into the authorities, leading to his arrest. Valet was charged with conspiracy to kidnap and later released in 2014. Gilberto lost custody of his daughter